Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Jeffrey Breslow about his book, A Game Maker's Life. Then we'll enjoy the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty, and we'll talk some football. Of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. It's a pleasure to introduce Jeffrey Breslow. Jeffrey didn't do well in college, but ended up as a leader in the toy and game industry. He was never in the military, but he did come very close to getting shot. An interesting aspect with toy makers. And Jeffrey also understands how to succeed. That's why I invited him. Welcome to the show, Jeffrey.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm delighted.
Jeffrey, tell us a story of going from going to college and not doing well to the toy industry to leadership. That's quite a trip.
Well, I wasn't a very good student in high school, and I was planning on going to University of Illinois. And at that time, when I graduated a long time ago in 1960, if you were an Illinois resident at the bottom of your class, you got accepted to University of Illinois. But my guidance counselor suggested a smaller school. She thought I wouldn't make it to Illinois. So I went to Bradley University, and after a year, I was on terminal probation, which is not a word my folks were happy to hear. And I went to visit some friends at University of Illinois, and I went into the fine arts building. My only A in high school was an art class. Otherwise, it was kind of C's and D's in high school. And I saw a display of industrial design in the hallway, and I didn't even know what industrial design was. But the teacher's name was Ed Zagorski, and there was a door half open with Ed Zagorski on there. I knocked. It was Ed Zagorski. And in 20 minutes, he changed my life. He told me about design, and he told me that the mantra of design is form follows function, that you can design a beautiful chair, but if it's not comfortable, it's a lousy design. And he just, in 20 minutes, I just walked out of there and said, I need to be an industrial designer. So I went back to Bradley. I got great grades. I transferred, and I had to start over again as a freshman, which my folks weren't happy with. But I went through the basic design course that every buddy in the fine arts goes through, and then it was until sophomore year that I got into Zagorski's class, and we did a toy project, and anyhow, that was the beginning of it. So I was dear friends with Ed for 65 years. He died a year and a half ago at 99 and a quarter, and Ed told me, he said, if you ask a little kid, a kid says, I'm 5 1/2, I'm 5 3/4, and Ed said, when you get over 90, you can start using fractions again.
I don't know. Anyhow, I'm over 80. I'm thinking about using fractions.
One of my classmates knew somebody who was worked for this toy designer in Chicago, and that was Marvin Glass, and that's how it all happened. I mean, it was just quite extraordinary. I was very lucky to have somebody mentoring me for all those years, and he was pretty active and smart and everything right through, you know, mostly 98 and 99. He died, I think, just of old age, that's all.
Well, that's awesome, and I spent 15 years teaching college, and the big payday in college for a prof is when somebody has an aha moment and they suddenly realize. So therefore, not only was it great for you, I bet it was great for him to see you go through that.
Yeah, it was great for him. I mean, he didn't, I left there and he, you know, it was just one kid that came in. What I found out about mentoring, and I did mentoring for many years in Illinois, is that it's the mentee that's got to hold on to the mentor. He wasn't looking to mentor anybody. But when I found him, I said, I'm going to grab a hold of this guy. And I didn't let go for 65 years. That's all. I mean, he just changed my life. But it was just an amazing relationship with him.
Before we go on, you were almost shot at a meeting of toy supervisors, leaders. Tell us that story.
Okay. Well, this happened in our office. This was at Marvin Glass. And it was one of our employees that worked for us. And he worked for us for 7 years. And we had about 70 people that worked in the office. It was a big group. And he came to work one day with two guns. And there were 10 partners. And we had partners meetings every morning. And he walked through the building. I mean, nobody paid any attention. This guy had worked there 7 years. I mean, whether he was carrying the gun by his side or what, nobody knows. But he walked up through the building and opened the back door to this big office and expected to see 10 guys in there. He had two guns, and there were only two left in, my two partners. There were three of us. I had a phone call, and the receptionist called me in the office and said, Jim Salem's on the phone. And I said, Jim, and she said, oh, you talked to him a week ago. And I said, you know what? I'll talk to him. Put it in the office across the hall because the meeting was breaking up. So I started talking to Jim, and I hear the shots, and you don't realize they're shots. It wasn't like I ducked or anything. And I said, hold on a second. And I walked back into this big office, but the door was open. And I know I closed the door. When out of state, you know. And I saw Anson. He was slumped in the chair. He shot in the face twice. And Joe, another partner, was shot in the chest. He looked at me and fell on the couch, and he died before he even got to the hospital. And so I never saw the shooter, but he went in the back and was shooting down the corridor where his office was, and he killed a young girl that worked for us. He injured two other people. And then when he got to his own office, he shot and killed himself, and it was over. And again, he worked for us 7 years. He was an electrical engineer, you know, a quiet guy, and nobody had any idea that something like this was going to happen.
That kind of thing can happen, and it's always
horrible when it does.
It
happens all the time. I mean, it's astounding how it happens all the time. And I think the difference today is that we know about these things instantly with our phones and everything else. I don't know that it's happening more or less or whatever, but it's something that is always going on. It's just that we're aware of these things instantly all around the country.
Yep. And it's true. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Jeff Breslow about his book, A Game Maker's Life. So you wrote a book, but it's really about the secrets to success, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, in some ways, I think that, number one, I was lucky to find something I loved and was good at. And I think everybody is good at something. They just never can find it. I mean, it just so happened. If I didn't go to Illinois and if I didn't end up meeting Ed and all the rest of it, I could have been driving a Budweiser truck for most of my life. I mean, and I really say that honestly. I mean, it was just, instead of turning one way, I turned the other way. And that makes all the difference in the world. And there's no way to predict it. What I learned on that day is that, number one, you're not really in control of your life. You think you are, especially at a kid. You know, I was 34 years old when this happened. So it taught me that you have things that you don't control. And the other thing it taught me is to live in the moment all the time. I mean, I believe that, you know, I have a past. It's okay to remember your past and talk about your past, but not live there. And people live there. And the same thing going forward. If you're going to do something, do it now. Do it tomorrow. Don't say, all right, in 5 years, I'm going to do this. I'm going to blah, 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 do that. Do it if you can. That's all. So, you know, it changed my life. And the other thing is, people said, thank God you're alive. Thank God you're alive. And in my mind, I said, wow. I mean, if I'm thanking God I'm alive, I think God has to take responsibility for what happened as well. He doesn't just get thanked for things that are good. So that kind of changed my perspective on things at the time. Yeah.
Okay. One thing that is for sure, you wrote a great book, A Game Maker's Life, and it's about your life. How can people get copies of it? How can they buy them?
Well, it's on Amazon. I mean, it's supposed to ship at the end of this month, but you can actually order it on Amazon. I've got a number of copies already. So I will, if you let me know your address, I'll send you a copy. You'll get it in the next few days.
How can they contact you?
Well, you can contact me by email, jeffreybreslow.com. And if you have a question about anything, and, you know, I get lots of emails, but if something intrigues me, you know, and it's not, I have an idea for a new toy or game. That's not going to work. Okay.
Gotcha.
I've been 41 years. And we really didn't look at any outside ideas because we were generating ideas. In the course of a year, we would generate close to 700 ideas for toys and games and dolls. We probably, you know, end up building 150 of them. We'd probably show maybe 100 of them to clients. We'd license 30 of them. And if five or six succeeded, it paid for everything. We were in the business of entertainment. And in the entertainment world, it's built on failure. Books, music, theater, dance, you know, all the entertainment world is built on failure. And it's okay to fail. You have to learn how to fail. Do it again, fail, do it again. And that's the good news and the bad news about the entertainment world. I mean, if you're a surgeon, a lawyer, you can't fail too often. But the entertainment world, you have to understand that that's what it takes. Now, it's a difficult thing to teach young designers that you got an idea, next, got an idea, next. You know, and that was the genius of my boss, is that he understood that. And if you worked there for a week, okay, and you had an idea and made a prototype, and the senior vice president of a big toy company came in, you went into that conference room and you pitched it. He took it away from you. And you went in to pitch it. The guy looked at it and said, nope, I don't like it. Next. Okay. Or he looked at it and said, that is terrific. I love the idea. And that's what you work for. Creative people don't respond to money. You can't say, I'll give you a raise, be more creative. That doesn't work. What works for creative people is the applause in the audience when you're on the theater. Okay. You're making music. I mean, that's what you respond to. Creativity is not driven. It's driven by pressure in the right kind of way. There's a deadline for a meeting. There's a deadline for an art show.
whatever. It's part of the process, and you have to understand that.
Yes, sir. Jeffrey, that's awesome. And the book is awesome and worth reading. Jeffrey, thank you. Thanks for taking time to join us today. Thank you for the leadership you provided to our nation and the entertainment. I'm proud to call you a friend.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate your time.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to run hard for a couple of miles, troops. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
$30 trillion in debt, 20 years of endless war, and veterans not able to get the care they deserve. These are some of the issues concerned Veterans for America is confronting head-on. At CVA, we aim to amplify the veteran perspective to create a better future for all Americans. But we need your help. Join CVA in shaping a better tomorrow for you, your family, and your community. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement. That's cv4a.org.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time for our Battle of the Month. So, of course, we're joined by Brigadier General Chris Petty. Glad you're on the team, Chris.
I am happy to be here with you again, Denny.
Chris, give us a quick review of your time in Mother Army. You were in for quite a long time, both active and reserve, right?
Yep, 31 years. As you mentioned, retired as a Brigadier General out of U.S. NORTHCOM, where I was the Deputy Director of Operations. Graduated West Point, as you did, although you're older than me. I like to point that out. In 87, and went to flight school, did all the normal stuff, but frankly, the Cold War was ending. The future looked kind of boring, and so I joined the National Guard, actually, and did a lot of things with the Guard and became a full-time Guardsman. And I guess my highlight reel would include a battalion command, an aviation unit during the surge in Iraq. And probably as a general officer, my command of the NATO headquarters in Bosnia in 2014 and 15, and that was an interesting part of the world. Then, you know, served in the Pentagon and did some normal staff assignments, but really a great, fulfilling Army career and an honor to lead American sons and daughters in Iraq and try to do good things over there. And so it was just, I wouldn't take it back. It was fulfilling and pretty awesome.
I understand totally. And folks, I retired from the Army in 86. Chris came on in 87. I don't think the Army could have handled both of us at the same time. Okay, our battle this month is Okinawa. As I remember correctly, as it's a World War II naval battle, and it went on for a number of months, and it was quite decisive. Am I right?
Yes, this is a monster battle. Really the culmination of all of the work that was done for 2.5 years in the Pacific Theater with MacArthur's island hopping that began in Guadalcanal in August of 42, and Nimitz move across the Central Pacific, 43 and 44. So this was where it culminated at Okinawa, because it was supposed to be the final jump-off point for the invasion of Japan.
And that would have been, had Japan not surrendered thanks to two atomic bombs, it would have been the jump-off point, wouldn't it?
It would have. It was all set up. It was a very bloody contest, but we won, obviously, that battle at great cost. 82 days of grinding combat from 1 April to 22 June of 45. But that really was to set the staging area for the invasion of the mainland.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Chris Petty about the Battle of the Month, which is the Battle for Okinawa. Okay, Chris. Take us there.
Okay, so like I said, you have MacArthur in the Philippines. He's drove up the island chain in the South Pacific. You have Nimitz, who has just taken Iwo Jima. So the stage is set for these two commanders to join forces, essentially, to create the jumping off point for the invasion of Japan. So this is set up as, this is the largest amphibious assault of the Pacific War. People don't realize that. And you have Lieutenant General Simon Buckner, who was actually killed in battle, which is another interesting historical footnote, the highest ranking officer to be killed in battle in World War II, versus Lieutenant General Matsura Yoshijima of Japan, commanding the 32nd Army Group. So it's 183,000 American soldiers and Marines against 100,000 Japanese troops and a couple of 100,000 Okinawans, which were Japanese citizens. So they were definitely on Japan's side. And interesting to this battle, 4,500 kamikaze pilots. This is why the Navy was in a fight for its life here off the shores and the surrounding waters of Okinawa. And so Buckner's plan is pretty basic. He lands his Army Corps and his Marine Corps, this interesting joint operations, on the west side of the island, drives through the middle of the island to sever it in half after a significant artillery prep, and thinks that the Japanese are strong in the north, so he turns north, finds light resistance, so he lets the Marines go and do their thing, and he turns south and realizes in a couple of days, this Yoshijima guy has really set up a strong defense.
And that didn't stop it, because he had to take it out. And indeed, he lived almost to the, he was killed, what, a couple of days before the final battle was won?
Yeah, he was. He was observing artillery fire, and the Japanese got off some lucky artillery or mortars, and a piece of shrapnel from the coral nearby just lodged in his chest and killed him. So this is a struggle between Buckner's 10th Army now moving south over this coral hillside landscape full of caves and bunkers and tunnels and pillboxes. And Yoshijima knew he was on a suicide mission. I mean, his sole goal was to slow down the Americans and create as much death and destruction and pain on America as possible so that potentially Americans would rethink the entire idea of an invasion. So he was on a suicide mission. And he set up his defenses exceedingly well. Every single avenue of approach was covered by pre-registered artillery, mortars, machine gun nests, pillboxes. And he really exacted a toll. It was inch by inch, yard by yard. I think at one point the Marines were losing 200 Marines for every 100 yards of ground game. So this was one of the bloodiest, meanest ground battles in the entire war.
It sure was. But ultimately, we won. And I believe the good Japanese general who was on a suicide mission ended up committing suicide, didn't he?
He did. He did what was considered the honorable thing with his chief of staff when they were being overrun on the final days in June of 45. And they both committed their harakiri suicide ritual together because the outcome was inevitable. But he did his job. He inflicted 7,400 U.S. service members were killed on land, 38,000 wounded. And again, the part that people don't understand is the Navy suffered its worst losses of the entire war. They lost 5,000 sailors in the waters around Okinawa, and 26 ships were sunk by kamikazes. So it was a massive kamikaze struggle for the Navy at the same time this thing was going on.
And on the other hand, Japan just about ran out of kamikaze pilots and planes at that point. So the end was near.
Yeah, this was desperation. The whole suicide strategy towards the end of the war for Japan was an abject failure. I mean, it was driven by a lot of different factions within the imperial staff, and there was a lot of disagreement. But this suicide strategy towards the end was not successful, obviously. Now, people don't, I mean, my theory is Okinawa is not well understood because it was overshadowed by a few things. Number one, it was very costly for the Americans. And in hindsight, The Hiroshima bomb was dropped in August, so it's like 6 weeks after the battle. So who wants to celebrate, 42,000 dead and wounded Americans 6 weeks later when the atomic bomb made it all look pretty irrelevant? And then, we had victory in Europe in May of 45. So
yes.
Everyone's celebrating we beat Hitler, so that overshadowed the battle. And also the commander was killed too, which is not a highlight for America. So a lot of reasons this kind of, I won't say got buried in history. It wasn't celebrated and it was overshadowed by events quickly. So it's just not top of mind for Americans, this massive struggle in the Pacific.
Chris, that's awesome. What a good summary. Thank you for this great presentation of our history. I'm glad you're on the team, and I look forward to next month's battle. This is fun.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. I enjoy it.
Coming up next on Front Lines of Freedom, we'll talk football with co-host Quentin Roberts about the Service Academy football, and we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice, then take a break and stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HealthVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HealthVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HealthVet.net. Visit HealthVet.net for all your family's needs.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Front Lines of Freedom promo code. Welcome back to Front Lines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. Well, troops, it's that time of year. College football season is about to start. And our football co-host, Quentin Roberts, and I will be covering each game played by Army, Navy, and Air Force. In case you didn't know, both of us played football, me at West Point, Quentin at Air Force. Okay, I played intramural and he played varsity. But other than that, and Quentin's been off duty since the last bowl games last January, so he's been goofing off. So welcome back to duty, bro. Glad to have you back.
Hey, Danny, it's awesome to be here. Looking forward to another great season of Service Academy football.
Yes, sir. Quentin, take a minute and share a favorite memory from your time playing football at Air Force.
Oh, boy. You know, there's so many, Danny. And I'll tell you one that I like to talk about, and that is I was a walk-on. So as a walk-on, there's 100 recruits already. And once they said that me and about five other gentlemen, we had to go to try to get equipment. Well, as a walk-on, you're not on any list. And so when they call for equipment, you're never called. So finally, I befriended as much as possible the equipment manager and said, hey, man, we need some equipment. You know, he said, well, buddy, you got to get on the list. I'm like, well, I'm a walk-on. We're not on any list. His name was Pee-wee. Pee-wee has since moved on to glory, and Pee-wee said, oh, you got to get on there. Pee-wee, man, we need equipment. We need equipment. And he says, okay, come back late after practice, and I'll see what I can do for you. Well, the team had just signed a contract with Nike for Nike to outfit them, and everybody had nice new Nike shoes, but the walk-ons got what they left behind, which was the Converse cleats and equipment. So we got the Converse cleats and equipment, and thus began our career. So that's where it all began. But it didn't matter. We got equipment, and hey, it doesn't matter what the shoes are that you're wearing. What matters is who's wearing those shoes. And so from there, we were off and running.
And obviously, since you made the team and played all the time, you were pretty darn good. So that interesting to have goofy starts, but that's what life is like, isn't it?
It is. Eventually, yes, I did get the Nikes. eventually, but it was certainly a humble beginning that I'll remember forever.
Well, that makes sense to me. Okay, today we're going to do something a little different because we'll be covering during the season is Army, Navy, and Air Force football. But there's two other service academies that we don't normally pay much attention to, and we really owe it to them. That's the Coast Guard Academy and the Merchant Marine Academy. Both of them are in the category of military academies, and they both play football. They play everything. So let's start there, Quentin. Let's do that today. Let's start. What do you say? Coast Guard Academy? Want to start there?
Okay. The United States Coast Guard Academy. I tell you what, Denny. The Coast Guard Academies and Merchant Marine Academies, as anyone would naturally presume, are they deal with a lot of water. And interestingly, they are, you know, you think about what the Navy is and you look at, say, what is the difference between the Coast Guard, Merchant Marine, and Navy? Now, I'm not an expert in the area. What I do know is within the Coast Guard Academy, they play on a Division III program. They are really do not have their calling card in football. As a matter of fact, last year, I believe they were 2-8. And so, you know, but they still want to compete. And this year they have, if we look at their schedule, they began with the University of New England on September 3rd, then moved to Curry College, Nichols College, Anna Maria, Norwich, Springfield, Catholic, which is homecoming, MIT, WPI, and then the Merchant Marine Academy. Ironically, they are rivals. And so that's why it's pretty cool to cover both of them as well.
It is. And I'm a little biased in favor of the Coast Guard Academy because one of my nephews graduated from there. And indeed, he's about to get married. We'll celebrate his marriage by honoring his academy. He didn't play football there, though. But the Coast Guard Academy is not part of the Department of Defense. It's part of the Department of Homeland Security. But in time of war, they can be attached to the Navy. And they're a much smaller college than the other the big three service academies. But they have the same goal. They're creating people that are willing to give their lives in defense of our nation.
And that's, of course, what's very important. And I think that's what we enjoy about service academy football, is we know, even though there are a few players, especially from Army, Navy, and Air Force, who are able to go into the NFL, more than likely, these are going to be the leaders in your community and within the service. And so that's really what it's all about for all of our service academies. As we look at the Coast Guard Academy, I went down their schedule. Their head coach is C.C. Grant. He begins his third season as the head football coach. He replaced Bill George, who retired after 21 seasons. I mentioned he was 2-8 last year, but he's been with the program for 23 years. You know, last year he completed his 23rd season as a defensive coordinator before becoming head coach. And he's also served as the offensive coordinator. So C.C. Grant has an uphill battle to really literally turn the ship around here as Coast Guard moves into the 2022 season.
Okay. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking football with Quentin Roberts. Okay. Merchant Marine Academy. The Merchant Marine Academy is a service academy. And obviously their goal is to provide officers for our merchant fleet, but the officers do go into the Navy or Coast Guard Reserve, and they serve our nation. And they're about the size of the Coast Guard Academy, and it's a good academy. And they play football, don't they?
They do, Danny. As a matter of fact, they were 9-1 last year. So a tremendous season for the Merchant Marine Academy. You know, and as they describe it, just like all the other academies, again, athletics is one of their four developmental pillars in which, as you said, they can go into the Navy or the Coast Guard. And so they have quite a few options. It's very competitive to enter into the Merchant Marine Academy. And, you know, but as I said, at 9-1, they play pretty good football there and often goes unnoticed. But, you know, we know that academics and competing is really one of those areas that develops leadership. And so, again, the Merchant Marine Academy is developing leaders as well as scholars. And they're playing pretty good football as they move into the 2022 season.
You know, one of the secrets is that if you go to the Merchant Marine Academy and go to work for the Merchant Marine, for the private companies that own ships that float, they pay a whole lot more than the military.
You're very right, Denny. They are very lucrative careers, you know, and, you know, the Merchant Marine Academy oftentimes has, you know, Division III All-Americans. And again, they go on to be senior officers in our various military services.
And these are two great academies, but we probably won't be covering much of them again, but they are worth our salute now. This is going to be a fun season. Thank you, Quentin, for being part of the team. We'll be talking next week. Looking forward at what the Army, Navy, and Air Force seasons look like. So We have begun our weekly routine, and we're both going to have to work and act like and actually know what we're talking about, aren't we?
We sure will, Denny. And it's going to be an awesome time. Like I said, I expect the Merchant Marine Academy to continue on with their stellar season. I expect them to really excel and have another winning season. You know, I talk about Coast Guard schedule. Merchant Marine Academy starts with FDU, Florham, SUNY Maritime, Keyan, WPI, Norwich, MIT, Catholic, Springfield, and of course, they end up with the Coast Guard Academy. When we talk about that rivalry against the Coast Guard Academy, number one, they play it in the last game of the season, and number two, it is for the Secretary's Cup. This year, it is going to be broadcasted by ESPN, so you can tune in and see the, you know, the nobody is very few students there are going to have a career in football after they graduate. And so they are truly playing for the love of the game.
Indeed. Thank you, Quentin. We'll talk next week.
All right, Denny. I'm looking forward to it. And we're just getting started on college football 2022 season.
Troops, if you're a veteran who's having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at ptsdlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to front lines of freedom. Stand tall, troops. Do some more push-ups, about 60 this time. I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
The VA frequently denies veterans disability benefits for PTSD. Barry Law has been helping fellow veterans with PTSD fight for compensation for over 20 years. At Barry Law, we've spent decades building a team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees to provide veterans with maximum firepower when appealing VA decisions. To appeal your decision, visit PTSDlawyers.com.
If you are suffering from anxiety, joint muscle aches, or trouble sleeping, try Day 3 Creation, a Christian family-owned provider of American-made, non-intoxicating, non-addictive CBD products created from natural, organic, laboratory-tested ingredients. Day 3 comes from a servant's heart as God calls us to care for each other with compassion and honesty. 10% of all profits go to Patriot Paws, providing disabled vets with service dogs. Visit day3creation.com to learn more. God bless. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Samson, a former Army sergeant, was amazed and not surprised to hear about the Feds for Medical Freedom. The military medical field is goofier than ever before. The rest of the government must be just like that.
Samson, I fear you're right. Indeed, the civilian medical field is pretty crazy, too.
And Michelle, a Gold Star mom, was very pleased with the interview with the naval officer who is a Gold Star dad.
Michelle, I can't imagine losing a child in the service to our country. My thoughts and prayers are with all Gold Star families. Okay, now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
Well, on August 26, 1804, following the death of Sergeant Charles Floyd, Meriwether Lewis and William Clark promoted Patrick Gass as his replacement. Barely 3 months into their journey to the Pacific, Lewis and Clark lost the only man to die on the journey. On August 20th, Sergeant Charles Floyd died from a disease. It appears his appendix had probably ruptured and he died of peritonitis. After burying Floyd, the expedition moved on. 2 days later, the captains held an election among the men to determine Floyd's replacement. Private Patrick Gass received a majority of the votes. Gass had joined the U.S. Army in 1799 at the age of 28. He proved to be a reliable soldier and soon won promotion to sergeant. When a call for volunteers to join Lewis and Clark's journey was released, Gass jumped at the chance. Gass joined the Corps of Discovery as a private. He proved himself a capable man in the first weeks of the mission. The captains agreed with their men. Lewis promoted Gass to the rank of sergeant in the Corps of Volunteers for Northwestern Discovery. Gass proved more than equal to the task. He served faithfully during the long journey to the Pacific and kept a careful journal throughout the journey, an important historical contribution. After the expedition returned, Lewis and Clark released Gass, giving him a letter testifying to his excellent service. Gass settled in Wellsburg, West Virginia, where he prepared for the publication of his journal. A journal of the voyages and travels of a corps of discovery was a well-crafted account of the journey that continues to be useful to historians. Having already completed the adventure of a lifetime, he served again in the army, lost an eye during the War of 1812, married at the age of 58, and fathered 7 children. He lived until 1870, dying only a few months short of his 100th birthday.
Quite a guy.
Yeah.
Almost any of those things would be worthy of note.
Absolutely. You should get a medal for marrying at 58 and having 7 kids.
Amen. Surviving the 7 kids. That's right. Okay, on 24 August 1814, during the War of 1812, British forces under General Robert Ross overwhelmed American militiamen at the Battle of Bladensburg, Maryland, and they marched unopposed into Washington, D.C. Most congressmen and officials fled the Capitol as soon as word of the American defeat, but President James Madison and his wife Dolly escaped just before the invaders arrived. Earlier in the day, President Madison had been present at the Battle of Bladensburg and had at one point actually taken command of one of the few remaining artillery batteries, thus becoming the first and only president to exercise an actual battle his authority as commander-in-chief.
Well, on August 23, 1864, the Geneva Convention of 1864 for the amelioration of the condition of the wounded and sick of armies in the field is adopted by 12 nations meeting in Geneva. The agreement, advocated by Swiss humanitarian Jean-Henri Dunant, called for nonpartisan care to the sick and all wounded in times of war and provided for the neutrality of medical personnel. It also proposed the use of an international emblem to mark medical personnel and supplies. In honor of Dunant's nationality, a red cross on a white background, the Swiss flag in reverse, was chosen. In 1901, Dunant was awarded the first Nobel Peace Prize. In 1881, American humanitarians Clara Barton and Adolphus Solomons founded the American National Red Cross, an organization designed to provide humanitarian aid to victims of wars and natural disasters in congruence with the International Red Cross.
Wow. I'm glad we have the Red Cross. Things were really, really rough before that. And on 25 August 1942, during World War II, U.S. forces continued delivering crushing blows to the Japanese, sinking the aircraft carrier Ruho in the Battle of the East Solomon Islands. Key to the American success in this battle was the work of Coast Watchers, a group of volunteers whose job it was to report on Japanese ship and aircraft movement. Do you think they texted information, Skip?
Oh, Colonel, no, I'm pretty sure they didn't. Probably is the forerunner of the iPhone, I would imagine. They probably had flip phones.
Some kind of phones.
And on August 25, 1944, after over 4 years of Nazi occupation, Paris was liberated by the French 2nd Armored Division and the U.S. 4th Infantry Division. German resistance was light, and General Dietrich von Kollitz, commander of the German garrison, defied an order by Adolf Hitler to blow up Paris's landmarks and burn the city to the ground before its liberation. Kollitz signed a formal surrender that afternoon, and on August 26, Free French General Charles de Gaulle led a joyous liberation march down the Champs-Élysées.
That must have been quite a parade. And on 23 August 1958, in the Taiwan Straits crisis, units of the 7th Fleet moved into the Taiwan area to support Taiwan against Chinese communists. This massive concentration of the Pacific Fleet prevented the invasion of the islands by China. Marines from Okinawa prepared to reinforce Chinese nationalists in Taiwan. It worked. Nothing happened.
And the drama goes on, Colonel. We'll see what happens.
Amen.
On August 23rd, 1994, a new Coast Guard record for people rescued was set when 3,253 Cubans were rescued from dangerously overloaded craft during Operation Able Vigil. Colonel, you know, I remember that. I was in college, and we played a soccer team from Fort McCoy, who was composed of Cuban refugees. It was very interesting.
Did you win?
Actually, we did, but I don't want to rub it in, Colonel.
Oh, okay. That's modest of you. And on 26 August 1998, following Operation Desert Shield, UN Weapons Inspector Scott Rittner resigned, saying the Security Council and the U.S. have failed to take a tougher stand against Iraq because Iraq was not following the conditions of surrender. I remember that because I'd been a Mideast war planner. Iraq was supposed to make everything open to inspectors to make sure that they weren't building weapons and stuff like that, and they weren't making the areas open, and we didn't push on them. Well, that's military history for today. And it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a Georgia woman was attacked while mowing her lawn. She was minding her own business, trying to get some tasks done around her home, when a man tackled her while she was riding her lawnmower. The 25-year-old man was running through the woods in a rural area and saw an opportunity to attack. Not only was the man running through the woods in an usually safe, quiet area, but he was also naked. During this furious attack to take the woman's clothes off, the husband ran into the lawn and attempted to help his wife. The attacker proceeded to violently fight off the husband and then went right back to pawing at the woman. So finally, the husband went inside, grabbed a gun to protect his wife. The attacker was shot at the scene and died at the hospital later that day.
Thanks, Colonel. The attack on this woman gives us the opportunity to dispel some very old myths that most people believe and even bank their lives on. First, let's start with this one. I don't have anything to worry about because I live in a safe neighborhood. Colonel, while it's true that the crime rate is highest in our largest cities, it's also true that violent crime has been spilling out into the suburbs and even into rural areas these past few years. Don't make the mistake of assuming that nothing bad can happen to you simply because you live in a historically safe neighborhood. The times are changing, and you must change with the times or risk becoming a victim. And second, only young and beautiful women ever get sexually attacked. Folks, this is just not true. The woman in this attack was 66 years old and her husband was 67. Ladies, being plain looking is not an effective defense against a sexual predator. Please consider that violent criminals don't think like you and I. Many times they are mentally ill or on drug or alcohol-fueled rages. Because of this, they don't think or act normal in any regard. All across our nation, older people are being targeted for violence because they are perceived as easy prey. Think about it this way. When the wolf is sitting atop the hill, looking down on the caribou herd, what is he looking for? Answer, an easy meal. He's looking for the weakest among us, which are the old, the young, the sick, the injured, anyone who can't fight back. And finally, I'm safe in my own home and in my own yard. It's my safe space and nothing can happen to me there. Today's story is exactly why I carry my pistol everywhere I go. I'm carrying it even now as I speak to you. While it's true that there are some places that are less dangerous than others, it's equally true that there is no place on the planet where it is totally safe. When throughout history has life ever been totally safe? The obvious answer is this: never. Folks, here's the bottom line. It costs you nothing to carry your pistol for personal defense, aside from a bit of inconvenience. But most of society continues to place their head in the sand and pretend that the danger surrounding us isn't there. Don't make that mistake, as it could cost you your life. Fortunately, the husband in this story was able to break off the attack and run into the house to get his gun, but he still had to leave his wife alone with a violent madman to get it done. It's time to get trained and get armed. Front Lines of Freedom wants you to carry safe and carry often, even in your yard while mowing the lawn. It's an inconvenience you can live with.
Skip, I wish you were wrong, but you are oh so right. Our movie of the month is The Paperboy. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it next week, and I appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, Dr. Bruce Gilley will discuss the non-woke difference between colonialism and racism. Then Gerald Felitti will discuss lawfare. That's sort of another form of warfare. Then we'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival, and we'll discuss the upcoming Service Academy football season. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase this book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.